advisement. The next case is United States versus Smith.
Good morning. And may it please the court. And Mr. Liggins. Again, I'm Andrea Smith on behalf of my client, Appellant D'Amico Smith, challenging the sentencing policy by the district court here of sentences that it intended to and did impose in this case, in my client's case, the policy it announced in court of what it was going to do in revocation sentences in the future. In other words, as the district court said, to take back any Rule 35 or substantial assistance departure and sentence a defendant who's gotten a cut in a sentence like that and give that amount of time back.
That seems like a pretty good policy to me. You get 40 months knocked off on a Rule 35 and you don't behave appropriately, and then you're back in front of the judge. He's restoring the original sentence. What's wrong with that?
Well, you know, Your Honor, it's funny you say that because we all hate these revocations. Of course, district courts do, the government does, defense attorneys do, and that's true. And defendants, of course, defendants as well. The problem here is, of course, is that sentencing policies are illegal. They've been reversed and remanded before. The court is required under the applicable statutes, the guidelines, and case law to do an individualized assessment. And my first issue up here is an ask this court.
Can a judge conditionally grant a Rule 35? I'm granting it, but I'm going to restore your sentence if you, saying right at the time that he grants it, that he's going to restore the time that he's chopping off your sentence if you're brought back before me on a violation.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head to say why that'd be improper. You know, the interesting thing here, I think, is that any upward departures are required under the guidelines to be provided notice to the defendant and the defense lawyer so we can marshal reasons or grounds why they shouldn't be imposed. And they do, and that's required in the sentencing context. Of course, it's not required in the revocation context.
Well, isn't a problem here that in terms of the guidelines, 7B1.4 and Section 3583E3, The sentencing ranges are advisory,
yes,
and as
ma'am.
You pointed out, it has to be an individualized assessment, and didn't the district court take into account and mention the various violations that had occurred in addition to just the policy? So it wasn't just a situation where he said, I have this policy, and I agree with Judge Evans, there may be a reasonable basis for the policy, but he also looked at the individual conduct of the appellant here.
He did that, Judge, of course, after he announced that this is a policy. If you recall the facts, the government attorney...
So is there some rule against that? I mean,
no, but
some
I...
Some order that the district court has to do it in?
Your Honor,
that's what you're suggesting.
I'm suggesting that the judge said, this is my policy. You take the message back to BOP, tell all the defendants, this is my policy from now on. And that is not individualized assessment. He gave exactly the 40 months back that Mr. Smith, Appellant Smith, had gotten on a Rule 35 reduction before. That's what he gave back. He didn't give 35. It wasn't just an upward departure, which, of course...
So we send it back, and what happens?
I think the Judge Gilbert will have to do an individualized assessment and reimpose a sentence in conformity with the law.
Which will probably be exactly the same.
It may well be, Judge. It may well be. And, of course, as you know...
This guy, the exasperation everyone has with revocations is... But this is a more than a classic example of disregard of what he had as far as not being confined.
You mean in terms of his violations, Judge?
Yeah.
I don't know. I probably do two or three of these a week, Judge, and luckily most of them don't appeal. And it's not. thank goodness I'd be up here all the time. But it's not. It's not another bank robbery. It's not outselling drugs, which I would consider the more.
They weren't major crimes.
Yeah, and those I would consider the more egregious ones. This is a typical. He might have had
this repetition of
violations. Yes, Your Honor.
Violation.
And I don't deny that. I mean, he had clearly had more than one or two dirty urines. He had more than a few speeding tickets. All put together, I think Judge Gilbert was accurate when he said that he wasn't taking it seriously. My point is.
The problem is, Judge Gilbert.
I'm sorry, you mean to mention
this. if he did anything wrong here, was speaking honestly. If he had said, I'm just going to give you 40 months, period,
and
didn't say it was my policy to restore the time that was cut on a Rule 35, then...
We wouldn't be here, Judge.
Well, you'd have a hard time convincing us that was plainly unreasonable.
It would probably be an Anders brief in that case, Judge.
Right.
I think the enunciation by the district court here, this is my policy, take this message back. It came as a complete surprise to me, the assistant United States attorney, my client. I already told my client, I thought, well, you'll probably get the high end of the range, because that's what had happened previously. We start developing a pattern when we see judges and what kind of sentences they give. In revocation cases, and we start becoming familiar with those things. It came as a complete surprise to everybody in the courtroom that all of a sudden he enunciated this policy.
Yeah, but this is, you know, when you're talking about a Rule 35 reduction, that's completely different than somebody coming in with just a regular guideline sentence and now they're in a supervised release and they're being revoked.
And that's
Rule
true.
Rule 35 is a very targeted reduction in exchange for cooperation on the promise that you're not going to violate the law again.
Judge, I think it's inappropriate that the way the guidelines provide in Chapter 7 that an upward departure may be warranted in a revocation case if a Rule 35 or a 5K was given. And why that is because the government is getting the benefit of its bargain. A defendant has cooperated, given information to the case agents, possibly testified, stood ready to testify. What this has to do with the price of tea in China, what it has to do with the ultimate sentence, the government's got its benefit of the bargain. The defendant has given that information. Why that should impact at all a revocation sentence doesn't make sense to me, because I think policy-wise, that, and I know the Sentencing Commission has enunciated differently in the application notes under 7B1.4, but the government, and also the public, therefore, has benefited from the defendant's cooperation. It doesn't seem that that should have anything to do with the ultimate sentence the defendant's given. Now, that's my feelings. Of course, it's not the sentencing guidelines. It's not provided in the sentencing guidelines. But I don't think it should impact on the sentence.
I mean, that's a very good point, and I think you make a persuasive argument on that. But what I still don't understand why the judge couldn't, at the time of granting a Rule 35, say that if I see you again in violation of supervised release, I'm going to restore all the time I chopped off your sentence by granting this motion.
And Judge, I can't think of any reason why that would be inappropriate. What happens, of course, in the Southern District of Illinois is or most of our reductions are not by 5Ks. This just pops in my head. They're not done by 5Ks at the time of sentencing. The Rule 35 is granted a year, 9 months later after my client's off in prison. So the defendant never comes back in front of the judge to be given the reductions where the judge could actually say what you're saying, since most of them are by Rule 35, not 5K1s at sentencing. I certainly had judges say that to my clients. If you come back in here, I'm going to throw the book at you. I'm going to max you out. I'm going to give you
a... I said that.
Well, and they have said that. Is that inappropriate? No, but I mean, if we look at the case law that I cited in my brief about sentencing policies, you can't have a one-size-fits-all, and that's what the district court here did. He announced a policy. It was his statement. It was his terminology saying it's my policy, and he gave exactly the precise amount of time back that my client had had a sentence recut. That's a one-size-fits-all, Judge, and the courts have indicated that's improper. The guidelines, the statutes, applicable statutes, all require an individualized assessment. Now, Judge Gilbert did go on, as Judge Williams said, and referred to some of the statutory criteria, but the end result was he announced his policy, gave exactly this amount of time, and made a few passing comments in terms of individualized assessment.
Well, individualized is why I mentioned the five different. You failed not one time, not only two times, not only three, four, five. That seems pretty individualized.
We have to decide whether he was stating a policy and whether it's inappropriate, illegal policy. And it seems to me when he says the word policy and then he imposes a policy and uses the exact policy, I mean, is that improper or not? Whether he goes on to mask it or to act like he's really doing an individualized assessment when he really didn't. He imposed exactly the precise cut that my client had gotten before.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Judge.
I just one other question, just to follow up on your, I guess it would be your sort of spin on things, that when one does a Rule 35, then you cooperate, and you know you shouldn't be penalized later on if there's a revocation, because the government has got the bargain that they. There's no case law that supports that. I know that the guidelines
no.
don't support that. You don't
no.
have anything other than your just view of that, of the
no,
fundamental fairness, so to speak.
No. But I don't think, in general, a defendant should stand in any different position because he had a cut, because he gave what he had, and the government and the public benefited from that. I don't think he should be penalized any more than someone who didn't cooperate, did not help the government, did not help the case agents, didn't make a prosecution a case on someone else, did not provide information, background information, or intelligence. He's being penalized then for having done that and getting the time back. So it's just a policy issue that has annoyed me. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Leggins, and I'm here representing the government. I think the first point that needs to be made is a point that the court has itself already made this morning, which is that this does not appear from the record to be a blind application of policy. The judge was very careful in this case to enunciate that his frustration with this particular defendant. This was a defendant who, 3 days after being released, was testing positive for marijuana. He committed 10 violations over the course of 4 months. And I don't believe you can, if the judge had been applying a blind application of policy, then he would have, once he would have accepted the confession or the guilty plea to the revocation, then he would have just moved on and imposed the sentence without engaging in a dialogue with the defendant and without pointing out all of the various ways, as he said in the records, he messed up. So that's the first point I would make. The second point I would make is that the defendant did not object to this quote-unquote application of policy. It was an offhand mention by the judge in the course of close to a 30-page revocation proceeding. It is one sentence out of that, and had the defendant raised an objection, then perhaps we would have had more light cast on the question of what was the judge actually doing. Because they didn't do that, we don't know the answer to that question, and I believe that if under the elements you have to show to establish plain error, that the defendant can't do it in this case, even if a blanket policy were prohibited, this isn't the type of defendant who could come to court and complain that he was being treated unfairly by the application of that policy, given his checkered record while he was on supervised release. Finally, if you're not going to buy the, or you're not going to accept the plain error argument, that leaves us with what this court's case law says is the plainly unreasonable standard. I researched to try to find out what exactly the plainly unreasonable standard is, and I must admit that I'm at a bit of a loss. It seems like to be an amalgam between clear error and abuse of discretion, but whatever the case, the guidelines in this case expressly permitted the judge to do what he did. 7B1.4 note 4 says that a judge can take into account a previously granted Rule 35 in determining what sort of sentence to impose on supervised release, given that this defendant had 10 violations in 4 months, and you can also tell from the record that the court was disgusted with the defendant's propensity to blame others for his violation. And it is also apparent from the record that the defendant was not evincing a very helpful attitude during the course of this proceeding. I don't believe this court can say that what the judge did here was plainly unreasonable. And if there are no questions, that's all I have this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Leggins. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move.